want to start? I just want to get an indication from the technical committee. I see the deputy chair of the council is not here. Is she on her way? Members, can we start? Honourable George? Just giving the Honourable George a minute to finish his caucus meeting. And it's not a conference call. Damage control. Members, we're starting... good afternoon. I'm not going to say good afternoon again to the members. You've been here the whole day. Good afternoon to the technical committee. We're starting where we've left off last time. Can I get an indication you want to do that? So that we start where we left off and then we come back to where we were, or do you want to come with what you started in the beginning? From the beginning? Okay. Preferably from the beginning. Okay, so let's go. We start with the definitions. Who's taking us through?
Mr. Simon will be taking you through, but just for members' explanations, the pots in yellow are the things that we've changed since the last meeting. Those that are shaded in grey were things that the committee agreed to at the last meeting. So Mr. Simon will take you through the...
Thank you, Chairperson, and honourable members. The document... as indicated by the Secretary, has the shaded in grey portions and the amendments that are the recent amendments, which is shaded in yellow. For the purposes of the presentation, I will deal with the shaded portion, the yellow shaded portion, and then deal with the other amendments as and when the need arises. On page 7 of the bill, under definitions, we have inserted the definition of civilian secretariat, which reads as follows. Civilian secretariat means the civilian secretariat for the police service established in terms of Section 4(1) of the Civilian Secretariat for Police Service Act 2011, Act No. 2 of 2011.
I'm going to do it the same way we did last time, take page by page. Are there any questions, clarity? Are we in agreement with this? Agreement. Okay, we can continue.
The next amendment is on page 8. The definition of locksmith under D, paragraph D, the insertion of the word and the amendment reads as follows. Cutting keys and duplicating existing keys. The definition of minister is amended, and the amendment now reads as follows. Minister means the member of the cabinet responsible for policing.
Yeah. The footnote?
The footnote relates to paragraph D, which deals with cutting keys and duplicating existing keys. It is proposed that this be dealt with in regulations and that it could have implications for provisional registration, which the Act does not provide for. There was a consideration by the technical committee insofar as the apprentice is concerned, to have provisional registration subject to them complying with their training requirements. But the problem that we picked up was that the Act doesn't provide for provisional registration, and this is why.
But the technical committee are confusing issues now. There were two different issues. The one was the fact that capping keys was not included in the original definition of locksmith. The second issue was the issue of the fact that the locksmith said that the training requirements for locksmiths are not dealt with properly in the Act. So it's two different issues. So for me, the footnote is not related to what to the definition of cutting keys.
Thank you, Chair. We have discussed the issue, and we also considered the provisional registration as a result of our discussions, but initially we were of the view that it should be dealt with in the regulations. The other question that then follows from that is, are we going to specifically only provide for regulations with regard to the locksmith industry with regard to key cutters? That was something that we were still considering. But then a provisional registration came up as well, the question, and as a technical committee, we've considered to just flag this issue and maybe just get further clarity on with the industry itself. Thank you, Chair.
But with all due respect, you have, since last week to now, we told you to go and get clarity with the industry as well. So why are we still on this issue?
Chair, I think the issue what we're saying is that the issue can be dealt with in regulations. That's clear. The issue of artisanship, okay, and it may that is not a problem. The issue that we wanted to bring to the attention of the committee is that there could be implications in us then providing, because the committee said to us that one of the issues may be that key cutters basically are provisionally registered, and when they finish their artisanship, then they are fully registered. And what we
Secretary, sorry, I'm interrupting you, but you are mistaken again. There are two issues. The issue on artisanship was the issue around locksmiths, not key cutters. That's why I'm saying the footnote is at the wrong place. The footnote should not be there. The issue was on the registration or pre-registration or registration requirement of artisans for the locksmith industry. That was the issue. Can we agree we remove the footnote?
Yes, Chairperson, we will take note of that. The aspect is also dealt with in the enabling provisions relating to the Minister's power to make regulations, Chairperson. We'll come to that at a later stage. Chairperson, the next amendment appears on page 12 under the definition of security service, paragraph E. There is a deletion of the words manufacturing, importing, distributing, or advertising of monitoring devices contemplated in section 1 of the Interception and Monitoring Prohibition Act of 1992. Chairperson, there was a long discussion on this, and the view was that because monitoring devices are prohibited in terms of the Act related to the Interception Monitoring Prohibition Act, the view was that it was not necessary to include that in the definition. May I proceed, Chair?
You may not. Honourable Jules, before you do, what about page 11? You were meant to go and look at the whole issue around security officer.
Yes, Chairperson. Sira is here. We had a discussion with the legal officials, and we'll respond to that. But safe to say that in terms of the confusion relating to A, Roman numeral 2, and B, the view is that under Roman numeral 2 of the definition of security officer, it's a natural person who assists, and the focus is on the word assists, in carrying on or conducting affairs of another security officer, service provider. That is distinguished from B, where the natural person renders a security service under control of another security service provider. So the operative words in Roman numeral 2 is assists in the affairs of another security service provider, whereas B talks of rendering a security service. So the distinction between Roman numeral 2 and B is in 2, it's more hiring out. That's the understanding that you see, but maybe Sira can come in and explain that point.
Come on, Sira, please.
Sorry, Madam Chair. Just for clarity, I'm clarifying Roman figure 2 and B, is that correct? Right. In practice, Roman figure 2 refers to let's start with B. Sorry, Madam Chair. B refers to a natural person who is subcontracted to another business by his original employer. And Roman figure 2, this is what happens in practice, and this is how we've been looking at it all this time.
How is 2 different from B? That was the question that we sent you guys to go and look at.
Yes, Madam Chair. We looked at it as a situation which has a bit of overbreath, but for regulation purposes, we felt that it was necessary. This is how we looked at it in practice. We felt that it was quite necessary for us to have it with a view of how the industry grows and mutates.
Sorry, you believe it's necessary. You've got to convince this committee. Why is it necessary?
Well, Madam Chair, I think we looked at the term overbreath, and we felt that having it there will be necessary in view of how the industry changes, the mutation of the industry with both unscrupulous service providers who comes up with these contracting methods that are trying to circumvent the law. In practice right now, we have problems with people who open up cooperatives as a way to circumvent the requirements in terms of employer-employee relationships. So it can be removed, however, it limits us in our practice as far as these new methods that come around. Subcontracting cooperatives, I mean, a member of a cooperative is regarded as a director of the company, and as such, that person is not subject to BCEA and all other labor regulations. Now, with this overbreath as is, we are able to find a way to tie them around those issues, Madam Presiding Officer.
Well, George,
I think the good gentleman does not understand what we're talking about. Our question is simple. We are not saying the insertion of Roman figure 2 is wrong. But all what we're saying to you, tell us, as these legislators, what is the difference between 2 and E? Because insofar as we're concerned, we don't see a difference. But you might have difference, but what you're telling us all the other things which you are not looking for. All what needs for me is a simple thing to tell us. The difference between 2 and B is this. That's why both of them must be there.
And C. I think if the technical committee is not sure about it, don't waste our time. Tell us you need to go and look at it again. And then I ask again, what the heck have you been doing the past few days?
First, may I come in here? On C, that deals with labor brokers, Chairperson.
Which she was apparently one of. True. She told us that this morning.
Unfortunately, do we have to go and do the same request, the technical committee to look at Roman figure 2, B and C, so that they are able, because at the moment we are not saying they are wrong. Understand us. All what we are saying, we must be sure when we are asked as legislators what is meant by B and what is meant by 2, we are able to say, so can they go back, because it's clear now that they did not do that.
The problem is, we're going to let you go back to that, but I'm really getting irritated because these were part of the basic things that we told you to go and do in the first instance. If you can't explain to us, in simple terms, what the difference between Roman 2, B and C is, how the heck does anybody else understand it? I mean, just give us practical examples. Go and think about it. Maybe the wording in that we said to you, maybe you need all three, but maybe the wording needs to be redrafted. And you sit here, you can't explain it. I think I agree with Honorable Mulalek. Just move on, but you're not going to skip this thing again. You don't come back to us and think we're going to forget about it.
Thanks, Chairperson. Point is noted. On page 12, Chairperson, I've already presented on the deletion that appears on paragraph E on the basis that the view was that it's not necessary to have it included under the definition of security service because that activity is prohibited already. That's it.
Rivers, can we have a discussion on that one?
The monitoring devices which in section 1 of the interception monitoring Act, I'm not conversant with that act, but what type of monitoring device is he talking about? I'm asking this, Madam Chair, because some of us got what we call, I don't know whether you call it monitoring devices, where you put something in the gate which shows you when that person pressed the gate. Isn't that a monitoring? You are able to see from your house who is at the gate. And that is done by engineers. That's why I wanted to know are engineers included in the definition?
Sorry. Before you respond, I will date the meeting. That question was asked previously by the member as well, and I thought we have actually resolved this issue. Where it was made clear that those monitoring devices do not include your device at the gate that you are using. But if the company, the engineer, is doing business in that industry, he will have to register a zero.
Engineer, who's got a company that does those things, must it, that company be, is it included in this this manufacturer?
If the company, the engineer, and my understanding from what the discussion was, if the engineer, as part of his business, is doing the installation thereof, he's got to register, if I'm correct.
Engineers included in that act, because it's not mentioned here.
Okay, can I clarify? What we're saying is we're taking that out. It's in square brackets. Okay, so we're taking out the emphasis of the act is on interception of communication. Okay, and that is unlawful already under RICA. So there is no point in having to define that in this act. So what we are asking for a deletion now is of people being defining what is the monitoring and interception of communication. Of communication, which is a different thing, such as equipment that can bug a cell phone, etc. And we're saying we want to take that definition out of the Act because it is already covered under RICA, and we do not want to create the impression that we are legalizing something which is already illegal under another Act. So the question of security installers is not under this issue. It comes up elsewhere in the Act.
Clarified, Mr. George? Are we done with page 12? We've agreed on that previously. Continue, please.
Thanks, Chairperson. The next amendment is on page 14, relating to the objects of the authority. There are two options, option A and option B. Option A has a lot of deletions, but the reworked version is on option B, which starts from page 17 of the bill, Chairperson. Yeah, that is the recommended option, option B.
Read through it, please. Read through both options.
In terms of option A, that is on page 14 onwards, clause 3 or section 3 says, the primary objects of the authority are to regulate the private security industry and to exercise effective control over the practice of the occupation of the security service provider in the public and national interest, and the deletion of the words and the interest of this private security industry itself. So that is the deletion. And for that purpose, I'll continue with the existing provisions. And for that purpose, subject to this Act, to, in paragraph A, the deletion of the word promote and substitution of the word ensure. So that paragraph will read, ensure a legitimate private security industry which, one, acts in terms of the principle contained in the Constitution and other applicable law. The insertion in sub-paragraph Roman numeral 2 is characterized by accessibility, accountability, transparency, equity, professionalism, and stability. Roman numeral 3 protects and serves the interests of members of the public who use or are affected by the security services. And there's a footnote number 3. Paragraph O is being deleted, and the comment is consider whether to delete the principle here in terms of the existing provisions of the Act. Then the deletion starts from B, paragraph B, which right up to E, and I'll read from paragraph B, the deletion. Ensure that all security service providers act in the public and national interest in the rendering of security services. C, promote a private security industry which is characterized by professionalism, transparency, accountability, equity and accessibility. D, promote stability of the private security industry. E, promote and encourage trustworthiness of security service providers. So that is the deletion.
Can I make a suggestion? I'm sorry to interrupt, that you don't read what is deleted. Just tell us, delete that, so that we can hear what the new provision sounds like, please.
Then the further deletion is from G and H. Yeah, okay. On page 18, the deletion is on Roman numeral K up to L. Okay.
Let me explain again. I'm asking you to read that will be in the new, what you're suggesting to us. So don't read that you are deleting. So you must read, start again, read for us 3, read A,
A okay.
1, 2 and 3, read F, read L, so that we can hear what it sounds like. Remember it's the first time that we see now what you've done.
Thank you, Chairperson. So object option A will read as follows. 3, the primary objects of the authority are to regulate the private security industry and to exercise effective control over the practice of the occupation of security service provider in the public and national interest, and for that purpose, subject to this Act, to ensure a legitimate private security industry which, 1, acts in terms of the principles contained in the Constitution and other applicable law, 2, is characterized by accessibility, accountability, transparency, equity, professionalism and stability. 3, protects and serves the interests of members of the public who use or are affected by the security services. And F, determine and enforce minimum standards of occupational conduct in respect of security service providers. I, ensure that the process of registration of security service providers is transparent, fair, objective and concluded timeously. J, promote high standards in the training of security service providers and the prospective security service providers. M, promote the protection and enforcement of the rights of security officers and other employees in the private security industry. N, ensure that compliance with existing legislation by security service providers is being promoted and controlled through a process of active monitoring and investigation of the affairs of security service providers. Q, promote the empowerment and advancement of persons who were historically disadvantaged through unfair discrimination in the private security industry by encouraging, 1, ownership and control of security businesses by such persons, and 2, equal opportunity employment practices in the private security industry, and R, promote awareness amongst the public and the private security industry on the functions and role of the authority and the industry. That is option A, Chairperson. Option B will read as follows, and that starts from page 17. 3. The primary objects of the authority are to regulate the private security industry and to exercise effective control over the practice of the occupation of security service provider in public and national interest, and for that purpose, subject to this Act, to A, ensure a legitimate private security industry which, 1, acts in terms of the principles contained in the Constitution and other applicable law, 2, is characterized by accessibility, accountability, transparency, equity, professionalism and civility, and 3, protects and serves the interests of members of the public who use or are affected by these security services. B, ensure the effective regulation of the private security industry through 1, registration and renewal of security service providers, 2, accrediting and determining training standards for security service providers, and 3, providing assurance of compliance with this Act by the implementation of the system of compliance inspections. C, determine and enforce minimum standards of occupational conduct in respect of security service providers. D, ensure that the process of registration of security service providers is transparent, fair, objective, and concluded timely. E is a deletion, Chairperson. So that F, promote the protection and enforcement of the rights of security officers.
Are you saying E is deleted?
Yes, that was, it ought to have been deleted, Chairperson.
Okay, then if it's ought to be deleted, let's make it clear to members. So E must be deleted.
Thanks. If promote the protection and enforcement of the rights of security officers and other employees in the private security industry. G, ensure that compliance with existing legislation by security service providers is being promoted and controlled through a process of active monitoring and investigation of the affairs of security service providers. H, promote the empowerment and advancement of persons who were historically disadvantaged through unfair discrimination in the private security industry by encouraging 1, ownership and control of security businesses by such persons, and 2, equal opportunity employment practices in the private security industry, and I, promote awareness amongst the public and private security industry on the functions and role of the authority and the industry. That
you have the two options. The technical team is suggesting option B. I would like to remind members that we asked them to relook the current provision that is made because of the fact that it was repetitive and it was broad, etc. They are proposing option B. Can I hear members on the issue, please? Can you also indicate to us why your preference is B?
Our reason is because we feel that option A spelled out issues which are less objective than all functions. So we think that option B is more in line with clear objectives where you list regulate the industry through training, etc., etc.
Yeah, maybe if the technical team was in the meeting this morning, they would understand that this committee would actually like to legislate 8 o'clock in the morning you do X. 8:15 you do Y. 8:30 you do Z. Members, can I hear you on 3, on your preference? Honourable George.
Madam Chair, I support option B.
Are we satisfied that it's covering everything? Are you satisfied that it's covering everything? Can I make a suggestion that while we agree on B, so you can go ahead with B, that I think at the end of the Act, of the Bill, we should come back to this section because it might be that we've missed something or that we still want to take something out. So, but let's agree to work on B then. Honourable Mulavati.
Can you also just get clarity on the footnote?
Thank you, person. The footnote relates to A, Roman numeral 3, and that provision is similar to the provisions in Section 5 of the Medicine and Medicine Professionals Health Practitioners Council when we do our research in terms of comparative legislation, Chairperson.
Just referring to where they got this wording, if I understand correctly, that's where the wording comes from. Okay, you can move on then, please.
Thanks, Chairperson. The next amendments are page 18, which deals with the functions of the authority. Again, we have two options, option A and option B. I'll just run through option A. 4, the authority must take steps to achieve its objects, the means at its disposal, and may, subject to this Act and any other law, for the purpose of achieving its objects, A, exercise such powers and perform such duties as may be given or assigned to the authority in terms of this Act or any other law. Inquire into and report to the Minister on any matter concerning the objects of the authority. C, advise the Minister on any matter deemed by the authority to be necessary or expedient to be considered by the Minister in connection with the provisions of this Act or the Levies Act or the application thereof, and on any other matter relating to security services which has been referred to the Minister by the authority for the advice and recommendations of the authority. In terms of the footnote, Chairperson, under that paragraph, so footnote 5, we considered the inserting PFMA, but the PFMA is not applicable here, as PFMA's application relates to the authority and not to the security industry. D, on page 19, conduct an ongoing study and investigation of the rendering of security services and practices of security service providers in order to identify shortcomings in this Act and the Levies Act or any policy or rule made in terms thereof, and to deal with any evasion, abuse, or violation of the procedure or principles contained in this Act or the Levies Act or any policy or rule made in terms thereof. Again, there is a footnote 6, which is similar to the previous footnote. The PFMA is not applicable to security service providers. F, receive and consider applications for registration and renewal of registration as security service provider, and grant or renew registration to applicants who comply with the requirements for such registration or renewal of registration in terms of this Act. The additions up to page 21. Continue at N on page 21. Establish and manage branch offices. O, provide or disseminate information promoting and encouraging compliance with this Act, the Levies Act, and the Code of Conduct by security service providers. P, provide information to the users, prospective users, or representatives of users of security services regarding the compliance of security service providers with the provision of this Act and the Levies Act. R, in the prescribed manner, establish complaints office to receive, process, repair, or deal with complaints regarding the quality of service rendered by security service providers. Then at the bottom of the page, W, determine, charge and collect fees as provided for in this Act or in respect of any service rendered by the authority or any object made available by the authority. Page 22. BD, determine minimum internal control systems for security businesses, including but not limited to accounting and reporting procedures and any other procedures or systems. EE, conduct or cause to be conducted hearings, investigations, and inquiries with regard to any matter falling within the scope of its functions. GG, enter into agreements with or obtain the assistance of any department or organ of state, referring to the organ of state as defined, and not the state with a capital S that relates to security services in the Constitution. To conduct or assist it in conducting any investigation or performing any other function in terms of this Act or the Levies Act. And finally, Roman numeral 2, generally perform any act that contributes to the attainment of its objects. That is option A, Chairperson. Thank you. Option B commences on page 23. 4 reads as follows. The authority must take steps to achieve its objects with the means at its disposal, and A, subject to this Act and any other law for the purpose of achieving its objects, A, exercise such powers and perform such duties as may be given or assigned to the authority in terms of this Act or any other law, B, inquire into and report to the Minister on any matter concerning the objects of the authority, C, advise the Minister on any matter deemed by the authority to be necessary or expedient to be considered by the Minister in connection with the provisions of this Act or the Levies Act or the application thereof, and on any other matter relating to security services which has been referred by the Minister to the authority for advice and recommendations of the authority. D. Conduct an ongoing study and investigation of the rendering of security services and practices of security service providers in order to identify shortcomings in this Act and the Levies Act, or any policy or rule made in terms thereof, and to deal with any evasion, abuse or violation of procedures or principles contained in this Act or the Levies Act, or any policy or rule made in terms thereof. E. Receive and consider applications for registration and renewal of registration as security service provider, and grant or renew registration to applicants who comply with the requirements for such registration or renewal of registration in terms of this Act. F. Develop capacity at national and provincial level. G. On page 24. Provide or disseminate information promoting and encouraging compliance with this Act, the Levies Act, and the Code of Conduct by security service providers. H. Provide information to the users, prospective users, or representatives of users of security services regarding the compliance of security service providers with the provisions of this Act and the Levies Act. I. In the prescribed manner, establish a complaints office to receive, process, refer, or deal with complaints regarding the quality of service rendered by security service providers. J. Determine, charge, and collect fees as provided for in this Act or in respect of any service rendered by the authority or any object made available by the authority. K. Determine minimum internal control systems for security businesses, including but not limited to accounting and reporting procedures and any other procedures or systems. L. Conduct or cause to be conducted hearings, investigations, and inquiries with regard to any matter falling within the scope of its functions. M. Enter into agreements with or obtain the assistance of any department or organ of state to conduct or assist it in conducting any investigation or performing any other function in terms of this Act or Levies Act. And N. Generally perform any act that contributes to the attainment of its objects. That's the end of option D, Chairperson.
There you have the two options, A and B. Can I hear members on the two options? Personally, I think B reads easier. Makes more sense. And just a general question. It's not so much in this section, but in the previous section. There's no role for the council to play in this.
And that is dealt with under the next session governance.
I know it's dealt there, but I'm asking, if you look at this, whether I'm not saying it should be there, I want to find out whether we're not overlooking, for instance, you talk about the minister, etc., etc. Would the minister's request not come through council? Would the minister's request go directly to the directorate? Would the directorate report directly to the minister, or is it the council that should be reporting to the minister on these issues?
Yeah, these are the functions of the authority. And the functions obviously are determined by through the council.
Can I just explain that?
Madam Chair, I think I support what you're doing, this question, because it's important, especially in the light of what we had this morning. Probably when we read that one of governance, of authority, if we are not satisfied to get back to this, Because what happened this morning, it became very clear that the authority of the director and that of the chair is blurred. There are no clear roles there. And I think we need to come back to this once we have read the governance, because I am worried that you're going to have a situation where, again, there's a tap. The director says, I'm in charge of this, and the chair said, well, I'm supposed to be in charge and all that.
Can you, the secretary, if you want to clarify this issue before we move on?
We looked at, when we were doing this, we looked at other regulatory and it, those kinds of things are not spelled out in the functions and the objectives. However, listening to what the Honourable Member George was saying, perhaps what we should go back and consider, whether at the beginning of 4 and at the beginning of where it says authority must take steps, whether we can't include something in the council, because the governance issues come up later, but if the committee is concerned about that, then I think we would have to look at how we work it in so that we don't make the functions and we don't blur the functions and objectives of the Act.
Ms. Kulabana?
Yeah, I to my IB reads a bit better. It's a little, I think it's very clear, but I take what Honourable George was saying, that okay, we see what the objects are, and that at this stage is a wish list, because if any of you had been in the meeting this morning, you were. I'm very fearful. I mean, what happens if CIRA is incapable of fulfilling any of these? That, you know, where is the comeback, or where is the, if they do not fulfill any of these tenets, yeah, and they sound wonderful, what happens? You know, is there a comeback in any way, shape? If a member of the public goes to them and says that the registration, the renewal, this is not happening, where do they go? Do they go to, you know, where is the out? And where's the protection for the guy in the street? That's what I'm looking for, and for the industry, in fact. That's what I'm looking for. Is it maybe later? I don't know.
Honourable Suba?
Chair, I think what's being said now is that if you maybe look into the in 4B and C, inquire into and report to the minister on any matter concerning the objects of the authority, and then C, advise the minister on any matter deemed by the authority to be necessary. Maybe if we can take the role of the council and work that in. That must go through council. I think then we will be in line with what we want to achieve.
No, the point is, I cannot see that you can say inquire into and advise the minister if you're not working through the accounting body, and the accounting body is the council. And it needs to be, even despite the governance issues coming in, I think we need to be clear on it. So what we're saying, members, is that we prefer, technical committees, that we prefer option B. And secretly, the issue is not under 4. The issue is under B and C, but in terms of the council. But we're requesting that we work on 4, on B. Option B, that's the preferable option, and that you have a look at the council's role specifically in terms of B and C. On a day-to-day running, that's not the issue. The issue is your interaction with the executive authority. That's the issue that we're raising here. Your day-to-day running is not the issue. So can we ask that you look at that? Then in terms of the Honourable Kulabana's question, we will have to look at that also in terms of the council. In terms of the... it might come later, but we have to look at what happens if council becomes dysfunctional, if CIRA dysfunctional, etc., etc. We will have to look at remedies in terms of that as well. So continue, please, so we can, you can continue, I think, on page 25, governance.
Thanks,
can I again, you correct the things where you know, where they are, okay, we're not working on that option, but again, you didn't, the things that had to be removed wasn't all there, but fun. Governance of authority?
Thanks, Jefferson. On page 25, clause 6, is the insertion of 2A, which reads, the Public Finance Management Act applies to the council. That is in keeping and in terms of a comparative legislation with other similar, on page 25, My apologies. insertion of 2A, and that is comparative, when you do the comparative legislation, it's a similar provision where the PFMA applies to governing bodies. On sub 4, the clause reads, the authority must otherwise perform its functions in terms of this, and the word and is deleted. The Labor Act and the insertion of words and the Public Finance Management Act and in accordance with such guidelines and policy directions as may be issued by the Minister from time to time by notice in the Gazette. Sub 6, whenever the members of the Council are unable to agree on a material financial governance or operational issue which cannot be resolved by the Council, the Minister must mediate between the parties. This was in response to the plea by the Council member. Thanks.
This just on this issue, can I hear members on that one, please? 6, subsection 5, page 25. Lubana?
Yeah, I just have a query. Is it necessary to put in that the PMFA applies? Is that not standard procedure? I'm not the lawyer, but I would have thought that the PMFA applies to everyone. I mean, is it actually necessary to assert it into a... I'm not sure. I need clarity. I'm not sure why it's there.
Because we asked them to put it in. We requested them to put it in for the simple reason, and that was before this morning's meeting, that it was clear that it's not being taken seriously. So now we want to spell it out. Honourable George?
Madam Chair, it looks like what we require, we're talking about has been captured in 5, 1 and 2. But if you look at it now, it contradicts 4, that is the 4 and other sections of 4. Because the ARS case, because the authority is governed and controlled by the council, contravening the section and the authority acts through the council. So I'm saying what we wanted has been is there, but now what is in 4 contradicts this. Because according to 4, the authority can just go, can act and liaise with the minister without the body that controls them.
Are you going to say it's not contradicting it? But I understand exactly where the members are coming from. And I want to put it the other way. The way it's written now, it seems like, and it's going to create exactly the same problem that we're sitting with currently. The authority is governed and controlled by the council. They're not governed by the council. They should maybe. But remember now, we're making it clear that we're talking of a part-time council, including the chairperson. So I hear what you're saying. You're going to say wording issues and language and legal language and wah, wah, wah. You're not working with normal people here. You're working with people that look at the guts in legislation, let me tell you. We need to get clarity on this issue. Secretary.
I think, Jay, when we said that we need to go back to option B, on both those two clauses and include, I mean, I hear exactly what they're saying about the authority, because legally the authority includes council, but I hear exactly what the portfolio committee are saying and what we said that we need to go back and include council in that process so that it's clear we're not talking about the authority being the staff. So we will definitely make sure that contradiction is not able to be exploited.
I don't think you understand, Secretary, what the members are saying. It's not only that issue. It's not only going back to B. The problem is 5, 1 and 2. Now, authority is governed and controlled by the council contemplated section 6 in accordance with this act. The authority acts through the council, and all acts of the council are regarded as acts of the authority. That's where the problem lies. You know, I almost want to turn it around and say all acts of the authority are regarded as acts of the council. And I know the reasons not to, but let's be honest, the council failed us as well. This thing is still not solving, I think, the overall problem. And I know we need to look at public entities, but this is a special kind of animal. We're not talking about SABC TV licenses here. We're talking about firearms, we're talking about security, we're talking about abuse of power, etc., etc. Mr. Suba?
No, Chair. To me, 5, 1, or 2, yes. It stands, yes. I can familiarize myself with it. I can live with it. But it's not the opinion of my fellow.
You see, can I just explain the problem? What acts are council going to do that is considered to be acts of authority?
Chair, may I just go back? In terms of this provision, the technical committee considered deleting sub 2. But when we compared other legislations and similar bodies and in relation to the PFMA, this provision is exactly the same as in other legislation that is of a similar controlling body.
Thank you, advisors.
Thanks, Chair. The acts of council person would be, for instance, when the authority wants to sue and is getting sued, then it would have to act through council. Council would have to authorize those actions, and they are officially the acts of the authority through a resolution of council.
What you just said again?
If you are sued a person,
start from the beginning. All acts continue from there.
The authority acts through the council. So all the acts of council, the person, such as when you're suing somebody as the authority, or you're being sued, they would have to be authorized by a resolution of council, the person. So you would have to have authority that the council is authorizing that you take such actions that you have legal consequences for the authority.
Confusion come in because you yourself start off by saying all acts of authority are acts of the council. But the statement you say is all acts of the council are considered to be acts of authority. Yes, that's what it says. I connect. All acts of the council are regarded as acts of the authority. You started off by saying all acts of the council.
Chairperson, the authority is the body that is formed of the staff and the board. I refer to council as board, as the governing board of the authority. So the body combined is the authority. And then the accounting authority is the council. So council takes decisions on behalf of the whole body. And when it acts, its actions legally validate what the actions of the authority are. I'm not sure if I clarified it.
You're just confusing the issue. You're demonstrating exactly the problem. That's fine with me, because then I want to know why we appoint 4 people at the salary level of 1 million rand if the council must take all the executive decisions. Mr. George.
Madam Chair, this order, I'm happy with the number 2 up to the council. But this thing of all acts of the council as well as acts of the authority, that's why we've got a problem. Firstly, you're putting that council into a very dangerous situation. You're talking about suit. What about if they do something completely illegal? And you said all acts. What if they do something completely illegal? You must remember this council is not full-time. But that you are tying it to people who would be full-time and say all acts of them are the acts of the council. I think we must find a way of dealing with that. The first part of the sentence is correct. I agree with it, but I'm worried about that second part. You must remember, St. Lord, by this, like the shepherd said, here there is a lot of money. You don't know about companies here that are involved that have put trillions of rand. And it can easily, a lot of wrong things going on in this industry. Now, you commit and put people who are not even full-time, so all acts of it. As a matter of fact, I think this must be considered.
Yeah, explain yourselves.
Thank you, Chair. This is an existing provision currently, Chairperson. And we've considered this in view of the amendments as well, in view of what is required under the DSMA, because the authority, the council is the accounting officer of this institution. And like Sisa tried to explain early on, is that two basically means that the authority acts through the council, and all acts of the council are regarded as acts of the authority. And if you look at the functions of council under Section 9 of the Principal Act, it sets out what action will be taken by the council. So we've looked at this particular provision in view of the accounting responsibilities under the PSMA and the structure of the institution with regard to its the authority, the role of the authority, and the role of the council for that matter. So that's how we've approached this particular. But 5.2, just in closing, Jefferson, is similar to other institutions in respect of what we've considered, because we have looked at a number of them when we considered this with General Jacobs as well. We've debated all the issues with regard to in line of the executive, of the accounting responsibility of the council in respect of public institutions.
Wait, I need to draw a line here. The technical committee needs to speak out of one voice. I honestly don't think you understand the problem we have. We have a dysfunctional authority. Now, you tell me, you're not lawyers, you just like law advisors. And I'm not even sketching a possible situation. That's reality. What are you saying to us now? Who do we keep responsible for that? You're saying the council. That's what you're saying.
Chairperson, that is correct. The council is the accounting authority in terms of the PSMA. With regard to financial matters and everything with regard to the governance of the institution, the council would be responsible. And if we look at 10 chapters, and we've actually made that with the new incision of 10 on page 29, it sets out the accountability of the council with regard to the council would be accountable to the minister for the performance of its functions and must supply the minister with such information and all other things with regard to requirements for government, including the financial requirements. So we've actually built it around the model that we were presented with. So if council is dysfunctional, of course the minister will have a role in addressing that particular issue with regard to removal of council members and
authority. I said the authority is dysfunctional. Who do we blame?
Chairman, let me just, I just want to have a look at the particular section that will address it while the secretary is just...
Chair, we are the state law advisors now directing the meeting. Because I didn't acknowledge it.
My apology, Chairperson.
Secretary.
Chairperson, I think we're not saying different things because we had a long debate about this. And the technical committee is quite clear that in terms of public entities, it is the council that has to be accountable. We hear what the problems that the committee are raising. But in terms of public entities, it is the council that is ultimately responsible in any public entity for what happens in that public entity. If the authority is dysfunctional, it is the council's responsibility. We looked into the issue. If you remember when we met last time, we were asking the question about whether the council should be the accounting authority or whether, as you have in the police, you have the minister who is the executive authority and you have the commissioner who is the accounting officer. And we looked at all of those options in terms of the authority, and the public entity situation is very clear that it has to be the council that is ultimately accountable. So the dysfunctionality might not be at the council level, it might be at the authority level, but it's the council that has to be held accountable if they remain a public entity.
Now, Honourable Stewart, just before you come in, can we get clarity? Because I think the problem is, and that is that what we saw this morning as well, is the fact that it blurs the lines. And it's still not solving our problem. Is it possible to have two separate? That you first say the authority acts through the council. And then you come to that second part of it. All acts of council are regarded as acts of the authority. It doesn't make a difference. It says the same thing.
Here, can I just say something? The way I read it is that, and that's the last part, all acts of the council are regarded as acts of the authority. In other words, what I'm reading here is that the authority can't go through anything else but just through the acts of council. They can't go off on their own and do something that they want to do if it's not through council. And to me that is clear. I don't know, we can maybe rewrite it in some other fashion, but that's how I understand it. I just want to know if I understand it the same way that you people
do. I understand. I'm asking again the basic question that I asked right in the beginning. Shouldn't it read that authority acts through the council? And all acts of the authority is regarded as acts of the council. That's what I'm asking, and if I'm wrong, then I'm wrong.
Chair, we also have to give the authority, the council, the right to act as a juristic person, and that's what this clause does. So the council can make a decision, and I hear what Mr. George is saying about what happens if they make an illegal decision. Well, then they have to be held accountable for making an illegal decision. But once they made a decision, they are a juristic person. So if the council decides to fire the CEO, the director of CERA, or the council decides to enter into litigation, it must have the authority of being a juristic person. So I hear what the chairperson is saying, and maybe we need to add that clause, but we cannot take away from the council the ability to act as a juristic person.
Okay, let's continue. I mean, I just, the fact of the matter is what we, in doing this and in reading this, it makes the task before us in terms of the annual report that much more difficult. That much more difficult. But be it as it may, continue please.
Thanks, Chairperson. We've taken note of the comments and...
Can I just point out that the statutory advisor reached the point where you wanted to respond to?
Yeah, under Section 11, there's also the role, set out in respect of the council, where the council authority cannot or does not maintain an acceptable standard for the fulfillment of one or more of its functions in terms of the Act, the Levies Act, and the Public Finance Management Act. And then the minister would intervene by taking appropriate steps to ensure proper fulfillment of the function, including issuing a directive to the council or the authority, describing the extent of the failure and stating the step to be required to remedy the situation, B, assuming the responsibility for the relevant function or duty to the extent necessary, 1, to maintain an acceptable standard, or 2, to prevent the council, the authority, or any person appointed by the council or authority from taking any action which is prejudicial to the object of the authority, and C, dissolving the council and appointing a new council. And then we've added, last time we've discussed, in D, taking such corrective measures as required by the circumstances in the period whilst there's no appointed council, and B, E, the interim period for of appointment of persons or persons in accordance with 6A to ensure the continuity of the fees of the authority, provided that the interim appointment may not exceed 6 months. So that's in addition to what we've tried to explain with regard to what happens when there is a dysfunctional state within the body itself.
The problem is, in theory it looks good. In reality, and I mean now let's speak reality, the council met twice in the previous financial year that they're reporting on. There's a mess. They're coming back for the third time next week. In reality, you cannot, and that's my concern, can you expect of a council that we are now saying must meet at least four times a year? If I remember correctly, that was one of the suggestions that we made. Can you realistically expect of a council to be able to know what is happening on the ground? It's a part-time council. And we already know from a painful experience that having a full-time chairperson is not the answer either. So I hear your theories, and I hear you referring to other councils and things. This council has got a different role to play. And I don't think it's as simple as cut and paste from other pieces of legislation and think it's going to fit this piece of legislation. I'm sorry. We must a 10-minute break for some of other reason. Unfortunately, I've got to apologize. I happen to drink for tea because the management in committee section has decided we don't need tea. So just a 10-minute break, please.